There's been a great deal of argument since Friday about the Nobel Peace Prize that was awarded to Al Gore and the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Part of that is partisan American politics, and that's a topic we'll explore more with political junkie Ken Rudin tomorrow. But there are other arguments about the decision, too. What, if anything, does the study and advocacy on global warming have to do with peace? Jan Oberg argues that the award, particularly giving it to Al Gore, makes a mockery of peace and of the prize itself. We'll hear from him in a moment, then later from writer Stephen Farris, who takes the opposite point of view. We want to hear from you, too. Is an environmental advocate, and Al Gore in particular, an appropriate winner of the Nobel Peace Prize? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Jan Oberg is director and co-founder of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research, and he's been kind enough to wake up very early in the morning in his hotel room in Nagoya, Japan. And thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And why do you describe this decision as a mockery?
I just thought that it's important to stick to what Alfred Nobel had written in his will, namely that the prize shall be given to those who work for, if you will, grossly speaking, demilitarization, reduction of armies, reduction of war, reduction of violence, and good fraternity between peoples and countries. Now, of course, you can say that working for nonviolence with nature is an important part of that, but it would have to have, in that case, been linked with the militarization of the world, such as, for instance, saying that weapons, armament, wars are also destructive of nature. And my other main argument is that Al Gore was co-responsible for conducting a number of wars when he was a vice president, and that cannot be forgotten immediately.
Yet you also say the concept and definition of peace should indeed be broad, and it's quite a while since Alfred Nobel wrote those words in his will, what, back in 1895?
That's true. Now, I'm not saying it could not be done, but then the link would have had to be made to the reduction of violence.
And there are
ample connections between nature and militarization, such as the senseless use of raw materials, the strategic bombing in order to secure bases in oil-rich countries, etc., and the pollution and the throwing of depleted uranium, etc. So that could have been done, but it's not done by the committee.
And what qualities, in your opinion, should a deserving Nobel Peace Prize winner embody?
Definitely that there is a focus in the person's or the organization's work against war, against warfare as a way of solving conflicts, against nuclear weapons, against armies and military expenditures growing absurdly as they do at the moment in your country and other countries. There are lots of angles, even to a broad conceptualization of peace, that would have justified that somebody else got it. But I think a person who has been grossly involved in warfare, such as the bombing of Yugoslavia, such as the building of bases and military agreements all around Russia when it fell apart, when the Soviet Union fell apart, etc., is simply not the right person to reward.
And you also say that there are many others who do the kind of work you're describing who would be worthy recipients of this award.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. I mean, if the committee could not find any candidate, it should not have given it. There's been years when it has not given it to anyone, including it forgot in 1948 to give it to Mahatma Gandhi, which is ridiculous, too. This prize is not deserving the prestige it has, also because it's just a few parliamentarians in Oslo who decide this. They don't have a particular competence or experience or insights into what peace is. I'm not saying it cannot be useful, but I think we should not accept that the, if you will, in a gross sense, the peace-working people around the world should be deprived of a prize, and that should be given to whoever a few parliamentarians in Oslo think should be rewarded. Mind you also, you would not give the prize for literature to somebody who's made a film with literary qualities or something like that. It would have to be quite clearly for peace in the sense of reduction of violence in the world.
Writer Stephen Farris is interrupting his evening to join us on the phone from Rome, and it's nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, thank you.
And what does global warming have to do with peace?
Well, there's a growing consensus that global warming will cause an increase in violence in the world. We've already seen it starting probably in Darfur, where warming in tropical oceans seems to have led to a drought that's then led to land degradation, that then led to conflict, and when a rebellion broke out against the government there, that combined with the local politics led to some pretty gruesome violence.
And how did Mr. Gore's work or the UN panel's work affect that one way or another?
Well, I guess the short answer is, in the short term, nothing at all. What the IPCC is doing is studying and quantifying, giving us kind of a conservative baseline for what's going on, and what Gore has done is popularized it. Neither one of these guys have actually stepped forward and made any changes that are going to address the problem.
And they've advocated, particularly in Mr. Gore's case, they've advocated changes, but not necessarily implemented them.
That's right.
So do you think that he and the UN panel are deserving recipients?
No, I definitely think that if climate change, if we do agree that climate change and conflict are linked, then yes. And this is not the first time that the Nobel Committee has given the prize to people who say are addressing the conditions that can lead to war. In 1970, it gave the award to Norman Borlaug, who was the father of the Green Revolution, who kind of brought modern agriculture to Mexico, Pakistan, and India. In 1949, it was given to the director of the Food and Agriculture Organization. Last year, it was given to Muhammad Yunus of the Grameen Bank, who is doing basically loans and helping people lift people out of poverty, which, again, is not directly related to stopping conflict or stopping war, but it's stopping the conditions that can lead to war.
Jan Oberg, getting back to what you described as that very broad definition of peace, at least on the precedents that Stephen Farris was talking about, perhaps this is not so far afield.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I do see the point made, but that is not the point argued by the Nobel Committee, and it's not a point that is brought through in Al Gore's. It's not a priority in Al Gore's work for this. I mean, I haven't seen him distance himself from warfare, interventionism, militarism, nuclear weapons as a way of securing the long-term survival of the environment and harmony between human beings and nature. I haven't seen this point made. If that had been made, it would be revolutionary, and it would be well deserved. But that, having said that, secondly, I believe that the person, the choice, however useful the work he has done against global warming and alerting the world to that issue, he's not the first who's done that, by the way. This is the wrong person who has been involved in so much violence. You must also remember that this is the time of the Clinton administration in the 90s when it insisted on upholding the sanctions on Iraq, which cost at least 1 million people their lives. Now, I did not hear at that time that Al Gore said this was inhuman or that this was cruel or this was weapons of mass destruction against innocent Iraqis, children and women. The bombing of Yugoslavia, the same. I don't think that these things can be separated. You have to reward a person who has done something useful or recognize that what he did or she did was not useful.
Stephen Farris, should those other issues, the bombing of Yugoslavia, the sanctions against Iraq, should they be part of this discussion, do you think?
I certainly think they should, and I guess I don't have much of a basis of opinion there. I guess my question for Mr. Oberg might be, would he have been happy if just the IPC had received it, if Al Gore had been left out of it?
The IPC at least is not responsible, or has not been co-responsible for warfare around the world. I still think that the environmental focus or link to peace can be useful and relevant. As I said, nonviolence against nature is important, like nonviolence again between or among cultures or among people. Yes, I agree with that. But I don't think that is the point made. It would be important if we focused on the relationship between militarization and its destructive impact on nature. And it is hugely destructive. I mean, just think of what would happen if anybody used all the nuclear weapons, or just one of the few of the nuclear weapons we have on Earth. It would be environmental destruction beyond anything we know today. So I think that can be made, but it has not been made. It's not made by the committee. It's not made by Al Gore. And in particular case of Al Gore, he's done the wrong things in terms of the Nobel Peace Prize in his life.
Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in this conversation. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's start with Larry. Larry's calling us from Boise, Idaho.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to make a point, and I think it's already been made also, but part of what he wanted to do with his foundation was to award someone who had, you know, done the best or the most for mankind. And I think if we can bring global awareness to the chain, the global changes, I think that would do the, you know, be the best contribution that, you know, that could be made. I think him bringing that to the forefront can maybe cut down on wars that will happen in the future because of the, you know, global climate change. I think it's important that we recognize, you know, when someone's going to run out of water in one country, the next country is not going to sit by and help, you know, mm-hmm. if there's no wars involved. So, I mean, you bring this to the forefront is important.
Let me, in his a piece that he wrote on the webpage of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research, Jan Oberg cited Alfred Nobel's exact words, and I'll quote them now. The Peace Prize, Alfred Nobel wrote in his will, should be awarded to, quote, the person who shall have done the most or the best work for fraternity between the nations, for the abolition or reduction of standing armies, and for the holding and promotion of peace congresses. By that definition, Larry, do you think the award was rightly made?
Well, certainly by the first part of it, I do.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking about the award of the Nobel Peace Prize to Albert Gore and to the UN's panel on climate change. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me just reintroduce our guest, Jan Oberg, director and co-founder of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research, with us on the line from Nagoya in Japan, and Stephen Farris, who's working on a book about the political, economic, and strategic impacts of climate change. He's with us on the line from Rome in Italy. And let's see if we can get, this is Madeline. Madeline's on the line with us from Durham, North Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, you know, I consider myself an environmentalist. I'm getting my PhD in environmental policy, and I think climate change is very important. But Al Gore really hasn't made any personal commitments. He lives in a big house. He flies all around the world in a huge airplane, and he's calling on people to make these sacrifices. And it wouldn't be nice to see him make them himself.
Stephen Farris, we have heard these criticisms of Al Gore before, that he does not necessarily walk the walk, as the criticism might be.
I agree 100%. I think it's interesting. I think one thing it points to is that this is not a problem that's going to be solved by goodwill alone. If you have a person like Al Gore, who's essentially made a second career out of fighting this, and he's not willing to give up the luxuries that he's been able to have, it's going to take some sort of outside force, outside treaties, some sort of price on carbon, whether through a carbon tax or through a carbon cap and trade system, to bring things into line.
Thanks very much for the call, Madeline.
Thanks.
And I wonder, in a piece in Slate, Stephen Farris, you wrote that about a lot of the connections between climate change and warfare now, as you mentioned in Darfur earlier, and in the future, if climate change should be accelerating. I wonder, on the basis of what you've been listening to from Jan Oberg, whether you've changed your mind at all.
In short, no. I mean, I think the connection is still very strong. I mean, it's very hard to know what exactly climate change will do. We do have some examples from the present and some examples of the past where changing in climate has led to problems, and we do know that the change we're looking for is going to be unprecedented in the history of human civilization. So I think we can expect things to more likely be worse rather than better.
And that this is an award rightly made and rightly accepted.
I would say so, leaving aside the Yugoslavia, which I think is a different issue in terms of the climate itself, absolutely. The Nobel Committee did address this directly. In their opening statement when they announced the prize, they said that indications of changes in the Earth's future climate must be treated with the utmost seriousness. And then they said there may be increased danger of violent conflict and wars within and between states. So they seem to be making this link explicitly and directly.
Jan Oberg, we'll give you the last word on this. I know that you wrote in your piece that part of your objection was that the award was going to, not just to Al Gore, but to governmental organizations as opposed to non-governmental organizations.
I think that is an important point. However, it's my point and not necessarily Alfred Nobel's point. But yes, I think there are so many people around the world, what we call civil society, in movements, etc., men and women all over the place, particularly people in developing countries who are doing a lot and would deserve a kind of recognition and award because they are struggling uphill, because they are sacrificing their own lives, because they are showing civil courage. I don't think that necessarily is the case for Al Gore or the Intergovernmental Committee. And I honestly think that many of the world's problems are created by governments and arrogant power politics. And the Nobel Prize still has the opportunity and the potential to be rewarding of those who are working against these kinds of things. So, yes, that is another dimension, but I cannot say that it's in the will directly of Nobel. The main point is I don't want to see this particular prize being hijacked for other purposes to people who are definitely not peace activists, peace politicians, or peace intellectuals.
Jan Oberg, again, thank you so much for waking up in the middle of the night there in Nagoya, Japan, to speak with us. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for putting attention on this.
Jan Oberg, director and co-founder of the Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research, and Stephen Farris, go have a much better rest of the evening there in Rome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure talking to both of you.
Stephen Farris working on a book about the political, economic, and strategic impacts of climate change. We'll talk more about the political impact, the American political impact of Al Gore's Nobel Prize tomorrow when we talk with political junkie Ken Rudin on Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.